Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Anthony McCarthy. This is the Mark Steiner Show. I have the honor and pleasure of sitting in with Mark, sitting in the studio for Mark Steiner today. This is a very interesting hour we're going to spend talking about ideas on how we improve the openness in many ways of the great city of Baltimore. There is a collaboration that's taking place between Urbanite Magazine, which is one of the great magazines of our city, and a group called the Open City Project. Now, there's been this great exhibition that's been taking place, and good news is it's being extended, which really brings a lot of artists and activists and residents together to share their ideas on openness in the city. Around issues of transportation, around issues of the environment, poverty, all those major issues that urban areas face, with a special look at the Red Line Project that we've debated and talked about so much here on the Mark Steiner Show. There is a competition we're going to tell you about later in this segment, so you'll want to get a pen and paper. Which you really don't need because you can do a search online now. I keep forgetting. I'm the only person that still uses pens and paper. But you're going to want to get involved in this and get some folks together around you and think of new ways that we can address these critical issues that we face in the city around transportation and the Red Line. And there's a huge prize that's being offered for you, possibly, and a group of folks to participate. And we're going to talk more about this exhibition. My guest in the studio this hour is Daniel Dioka. He's the leader of MICA's Open City Exhibition. He's an assistant professor of art history, theory, and criticism at MICA, a design critic at the Harvard University Graduate School of Design, principal and co-founder of the Interborough Partners, a New York-based architecture, planning, and research firm. Daniel, welcome to the Mark Steiner Show.
Thanks. Great to be here.
It's great to have you in the studio. Carrie Kiaia, did I say that right, Carrie?
Yes, you did.
I've been stressing about this all day. Carrie Kiaia is in the studio. He's a MICA graduating senior, congratulations, student in MICA's exhibition development seminar, and one of the co-curators of this Open City exhibition we're going to be talking about. Gary Hanscom is no stranger to this program in our great city. He's the editor-in-chief of Urbanite Magazine. I've talked to him a couple times about politics and some of the other interesting things that go on in the city. Greg, welcome.
Thank you.
It's great to have you all here. And, you know, the Mark Steiner Show and the Anthony McCarthy Show, for that matter, we really do enjoy talking about the dialogues that people can really have around art, can have around art interpretation, especially around these issues that we face in Baltimore like we face all over the country. Most urban areas face many of the same challenges. Daniel, I want to start with you. Tell us a little bit about the Open City Project, and then tell us about this incredible exhibition and your class, this wonderful class that you teach at MICA.
Sure. So the Open City Project is, it's really an umbrella of a lot of different things. As you said, it's a competition, it's an exhibition, it's a catalog, a website, and a number of things. And it began, it actually began in 2009 with an exhibition that I co-curated with my colleagues at Interborough Partners. This was at the 2009 International Architecture Biennale Rotterdam. And the theme there that was open city, design and coexistence. And the theme was, I didn't invent that theme. It was introduced by a Dutch-based planner and architect named Kees Christiaens. And that got me kind of thinking a lot about open city. In fact, it was something that I'd been thinking about before. And so I started in 2009 teaching a seminar at MICA called Open City.
Open City. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that sort of was a successful seminar. I ran it for two semesters, and I sat down with George Siskel, who runs MICA's Exhibition Development Seminar, EDS. And we talked about, wouldn't it be great if we did an exhibition around this theme? So instead of having students write papers and things, students can make artwork, and we can really get a dialogue going about the open city. And so the exhibition opened April 1st at the North Avenue Market, and it closed at the North Avenue Market on May 15th, but as you mentioned, it's going to be extended. We're gonna open at a pop-up shop June and July this
That's
summer.
That's very exciting. Before you continue, let me put this in context, or have you put in context for our listeners. When we talk about open city, are we talking about something physical? Are we talking about how we use our space? Can we do better at designing our city? Are we talking about the actual life of our city, the how we interact with each other, how neighbors interact with neighbors, how we the actual life of our city?
All that stuff. like the Open City Project, the term Open City is an umbrella term itself, mm-hmm. and that's one reason that that we like it. It's meaningful, but it's open to interpretation. And, you know, we define it, you know, I think pretty clearly. When you walk into the exhibition, you see a wall that says, an open city is a place where everyone feels welcome regardless of such things as wealth, race, age, or religion. In every neighborhood of an open city, one feels like he or she belongs. However, in Baltimore, as in most metropolitan areas in America, issues like housing discrimination, bad public transportation, entrenched distrust of the public realm sometimes separate people and also create uneven distributions of health, wealth, and education. So that's how we define open city. It encompasses housing, transportation, all kinds of things, physical things, social things, policy. But at the end of the day, it says a good city is an open city. A good city doesn't have barriers. It doesn't have walls around neighborhoods that say, as Antro Pietola says, not in my neighborhood.
Not in my neighborhood. That's a great book.
Terrific book.
Before I want to ask you, Carrie, to weigh in. Tell us a little bit about the exhibition, who you put the call out to, and what the purpose of the exhibition was, and even describe some of the pieces that you all selected to include in this exhibition.
Yeah, I think as far as the purpose of the exhibition was really to sort of create a dialogue around these issues. It's not necessarily, you know, we're not necessarily trying to be activists, but at the same time, we, you know, want to get lawyers and activists and the general public into this space where they feel like they can sort of talk about these issues and mm-hmm. have a real dialogue. So I think that we definitely achieved that in over the course of the exhibition in terms of creating a comfortable and sort of productive space for dialogue.
How did the public respond to your call for work? And it's a weighty topic. And I know those of the artistic inclination love taking on those kinds of projects. But how was the response when you put out the call that you were going to have this open city exhibition?
I would say the response was pretty good. We got a lot of entries from just the normal open call. Mm-hmm. And then we also reached out to specific people. For instance, James Rojas is an artist and urban planner from Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And he came and made a really big, beautiful model of Baltimore that, you know, out of toys and blocks and things like that, that the sort of audience can come and play with.
And touch and interact with.
Move around and, you know, really plan their own city. So there were people that we sort of invited specifically to do specific things. we also, you know, we also collaborated with Morgan a little bit. There's a professor named Dale Glenwood Green who's done work about Morgan Park and Wilson mm-hmm. Park. So we exhibited some of their work. Our intention was to just cast a really wide net and invite as many collaborators as possible mm-hmm. Because that was, you know, how we wanted to achieve, you know, just getting people in the room and talking to each other.
And Daniel, before we bring Greg into the conversation, how did you feel? Do you think the exhibit sparked the dialogue, sparked the conversations and the emotional connection that gets people talking about these important issues, these issues that divide us and also have the huge potential and opportunity to really help people push through differences or through barriers that keep our ideas from blossoming and growing. You think you accomplished that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that the show was, from our perspective, very successful in doing that. It got a lot of people to come in. We had a huge amount of programs associated with it. We had a tour by Dale Glenwood Green and Morgan and Wilson Park.
Oh, wonderful.
All of the events were very well attended. People seemed really interested in this topic. And in some ways, we were kind of, you know, capitalizing on something that I think was started by the publication of Not in My Neighborhood by Andrew Pietola, who, by the way, was our resident historian. And So I think, I think there were some really great conversations that we had in the space. And, you know, it's difficult when you do an exhibition to really measure the success. If your goal is to get a conversation going, it's difficult to say if it's successful or not. But we really do hope that people will look at the built environment differently. You know, we hope people will notice that, you know, you can't make a left into Guilford anywhere along Greenmount Avenue because of, you know, bollards and one-way streets and no crosswalks. You know, we hope people will think critically about why there's no.
And I think we're all honest about how intentional that is.
Yeah, exactly.
They do not want you turning off of Greenmount and coming through Guilford. But that's neither here nor there. Just one of those historic facts about our city, yeah.
Yeah, and so we hope that people will think about things like that and, you know, why there's no, you know, as we go start talking about the Red Line, why there's no light rail stop in Ruxton. There's this, 5-mile stretch, you know, between one stop and the next. And the legacy of Not in My Neighborhood, which in Baltimore, like in most cities, is really a very racist sentiment, how that, you know, manifests itself in the built environment, that's very, it's very real. It has lasting implications. People think that racism is something that, hey, we have a African-American president. But in fact, it's still a very real thing. And we're still dealing with the legacy, and we're still dealing with very, I think, racist practices in real estate development. And so we hope we want to start to, you know, keep a conversation going and also introduce some people to these ideas for the first time. We had lots of kids come into the exhibition, old people, young people, a lot of people.
Pretty diverse as far as race and
extremely
participation. That's exciting.
Tremendously.
Now, you were telling me as we were in the green room, you were telling me about this class that you teach where young people, the students at MIKE, are actually taught how to put on an exhibition, a successful exhibition. All of the different stages of pulling it all together. Tell us about that class.
Yeah, so this is a really major part of mm-hmm. this story here. So George Siskel, who many of your listeners will know, is a curator and works at MIKE. And he has something called the Exhibition Development Seminar. And the purpose of the class is it's a year-long class, and it invites students to put an exhibition together under the leadership of a curator or a professor. And it exposes students to every aspect of the exhibition process, from thinking about everything from what are the museum labels going to look like, to what kind of website we should have, to what kind of programs, to lighting, to bigger thematic themes, like how do we tackle an issue like racism as MIKE. I mean, there are all these very, very big issues on the table, and the students did an amazing job of thinking about these questions and addressing them, and they just did an amazing job. They not only curated the show, I want to say they also generated the bulk of the work for the exhibition.
Oh, wow.
So Carrie here, you know, he did a tremendous job of, you know, designing the exhibition and thinking about lighting and labels and what goes where and all the things that curators
now,
typically
Carrie,
do.
Had you ever participated at that level? You're a graduating senior at MIKE. Had you ever participated in an exhibition at that level?
Yes and no. it was definitely the biggest exhibition mm-hmm. I had ever been involved in. But you know, I've had some experience in the past. I co-run a gallery with some friends called Open Space. So what we do there is a little bit sort of smaller and more contained. But this was a huge learning experience for me in terms of you know, mounting a public exhibition that was really sort of a lot of things to consider.
410-319-8888 is the number to join in this conversation. What do you think about our city and the issues we face? What do you think about how our neighborhoods are designed? And many times, obviously, historically in our city, designed to keep people apart, to divide the races. What do you think about public transportation? When you talk to some people, they say we have a world-class transportation system. They use it every day. They hop on buses and go downtown or go to work out in the counties. But other people say it is not as practical or as useful for a city that needs to move people to jobs, that needs to move people to our tourist sites and out of our neighborhoods to the shops and the other commercial areas of our city. What do you think about that? And issues like parking in the city. and where we put parking garages and who gets parking garages. I'm not going to turn this into a conversation about the developers and all the rich people in the city who kind of make these decisions. But we want to hear from you, 410-319-8888. We're talking about Open City, Baltimore, this incredible movement that involves this exhibition we've been talking about and a collaboration with Urbanite Magazine. And how they became involved. And now there's a competition we want to tell you about. But let's take some calls before we get into a conversation with Greg Hanscom, the editor-in-chief of The Urbanite. 410-319-8888. Ruth calling from Southeast Baltimore. Ruth, welcome to the Mark Steiner Show.
Yeah, actually, that's Bruce.
Oh, it's Bruce.
Yeah, well.
That's not even close to what they wrote here. But go ahead, Bruce. Welcome to the program.
I've been called worse. I'm kidding. Yeah, this kind of relates to what you're saying, that, you know, in the last couple of years, there's been a lot of talk about bringing new people into the downtown area, the Inner Harbor area, besides just out-of-town tourists. And what really bugs me, there was a time I used to go downtown a lot more often for any type of function, a gallery or a film screening or just whatever is going on downtown. And one way, if we had better transportation, that would help. But parking is absolutely atrocious. What gets me is they want to come up with all these wild pie-in-the-sky ideas to do the Inner Harbor, people movers, monorails, swimming, which sound nice, but they're a lot less practical than they sound. Here's a novelty. Have some decent free parking to make it easier for people that do drive to get down there. And like me, we come back to the downtown area instead of it's such a hassle to try to park to go anywhere unless it's something really you really want to do. You don't want to deal. I don't want to deal with it.
Now, Bruce, how often do you go downtown? What part of the city? You're in Southeast Baltimore. How often do you go downtown?
Well, I don't go down. So a couple weeks ago, I went down to the Pride to see a lecture, and parking was terrible. I don't mind walking. I parked 10 blocks from the main library was just to avoid dealing with the parking meters and parking garages.
Bruce, I think you have some novel ideas, some good ideas on how we can improve the city. Now, Daniel, were those kind of topics among the actual exhibits and the pieces that were included, were there things that dealt with those very practical issues of how we move around the city, how we use the space in the city, how we park in the city? Parking will always be perpetually a problem in the city. We have a lot of people in a very limited amount of parking space.
Yeah, I think Bruce brings up a good point, which is that, you know, what's an open city for me is maybe different for others, right? And I think, you know, for Bruce, the downtown becomes open when, you know, when there's places to park.
That's
right. And it's funny. And a lot of the things we discussed around transportation really could go either way. One of our favorite examples is the campus shuttle and the College Town Network.
That's right.
For some students, it's great because they wouldn't they're not going to go see the city unless there's a private, you know, kind of transportation system. But for others, and you know, from I think the perspective of a lot of students in the class, it's a bad thing, because if you stand outside of Penn Station, you see two lines of people. Mm-hmm. You see African American people waiting for the 33 and the 3, and then you see a line of mostly white kids from Hopkins waiting, and the bus bypasses, you know, most of central Baltimore. And it's just, it's an instance for us that kind of points at the complexity of this concept.
And how perceptions of, there are these moments, these flashes of light in our day that I will notice things exactly like that. That very nice, comfortable looking bus that picks up and it's a wonderful thing. I mean, it's a wonderful convenience for, I think, the university and for the system, the university systems around the city. But there is this huge gap between those nasty, mostly nasty, smoke-spitting buses that we crowd Baltimore residents on to move around the city. And, you know, I am horrible. I mean, someone could tell me what number bus to get on one day, and I swear I'd be lost the very next day. It's a very complicated system if you don't use it very often. There's got to be a better way. 410-319-8888. We're talking about Open City. We're talking about Baltimore. And there's this wonderful collaboration of art and activists and residents along with the Urbanite magazine. I want to tell our callers to hold on. I'm going to come to you in like 2 seconds, I promise. Hank, you're next in Baltimore, and we're going to go to Leo and Carlotta. Now, Greg Hanscom, editor-in-chief of the Urbanite magazine, how did you come and how did the Urbanite come to be a part of this wonderful exhibition, this wonderful dialogue that's taking place on the campus of MICA?
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting story, and a tangled one at that.
I like those kind of stories.
Yeah. Urbanite has been Urbanite was really born about 7 years ago with the whole idea of sort of bridging the various divides in this town. Mm-hmm. The idea was that there were a lot of people in Baltimore with tremendous ideas. They just simply weren't talking to each other. And so I think that kind of drives a lot of what you see in the magazine is this effort to get people to talk to each other. 4 or 5 years ago, Urbanite started what we call the Urbanite Project.
It was incredible. I mean, the first project was just a dynamite project.
Good. And this was basically, you know, the idea was we were going to take people from various backgrounds. Okay, we were going to take a brain surgeon and an artist. We were going to take a beatboxer and, you know, an architect. We were going to basically lock these people in a room together and tell them they couldn't come out until they came up with sort of a brilliant collaborative idea. So let's bring sort of the best minds together from various different sort of points of view and backgrounds and have them sort of brainstorm about what great things we could do for the city. And this whole thing was sort of born during the time when this was kind of in the air, you know, about the same time that, Ignite was sort of born and sort of nationally, and the TED Talks were born sort of nationally. There wasn't a lot happening in Baltimore at the time, but there was a lot sort of in the air nationally. So we started doing this, and 4 or 5 years into it, this was last summer, we found ourselves sitting around and feeling that there really is a fair amount of talk going on in this town. It's great. There's a lot of really, really positive discussion, good brainstorming.
A lot of great ideas that are really floating around the city. There is an energy that's fighting up against this despair and dysfunction that often Baltimore finds itself in. And right. The Urbanite's really been part of, I think, spawning that dialogue.
Yeah, it seems like there's something every weekend mm-hmm. these days, something going on. So our question for ourselves was, well, how do we take this to the next step? Okay, we've got these great conversations going. Now, how do we take these conversations and actually translate them into reality? How do we build something out of these conversations? How do we actually, you know, generate some physical results that we can all stand back and look at? And so the idea came that, you know, we wanted to make some partnership. You know, to do something like this, to make something big happen, you need people, resources. You also, it takes a tremendous amount of time. It takes money. And, you know, we're a tiny magazine. We're a small staff. So we, you know, this was kind of the state that we were in when Daniel and company sort of came to us and said, hey, we've got this great Open City project in the works. And it became a really natural partnership for us.
And so we're going to give details about the partnership and this contest when we come back from this break. I do want to encourage you, if you have an idea, we're talking dialogue, we're talking ideas on ways that we can use our red line, because it's going to be a huge disruption. I mean, let's be very honest. As this project goes forward, a lot of neighborhoods are going to be in a state of confusion. There's a lot of questions being raised about the red line and where it goes and why there aren't certain stops and all that. I want us to talk about that because I think it ties right in to this great exhibition that's going to continue through June and July, as well as this competition that the Urbanite Project is becoming part of, this Open City Challenge that's going to really encourage people to think of out of the box. I hate that phrase, out of the box, but to really think of new ways that we can address these very important issues that really does encompass. And I remember looking at the photos in the Urbanite at the first real challenge, and blacks and whites and Asians and Latinos and everybody just looked so ill-matched, but it almost really forced us to get beyond our comfort zone especially because a lot of people are doing, as much as we talk about the negative things, people are doing great things. Great ideas are germinating in our city. And maybe partnering with someone that's not your natural partner ended up being a great project. And I read The Urbanite. It comes right to my house. I pick it up at the grocery store. I pick it up wherever I am. It's just a great magazine.
Great.
So we're going to talk about this challenge, The Urbanite Project, the Open City Challenge, and more about the exhibition and how you can get involved. Callers, stay on the line. When we get back from this break, we're going to go straight to the phones and then inform you about the challenge. 410-319-8888 is the number to join in this conversation. As I go to this break, I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Our conversation continues right after this break. I'm Anthony McCarthy. Welcome to The Mark Steiner Show. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered directly to your inbox. Registration is available at urbanitebaltimore.com. Make sure you check that out. We are talking about a wonderful project here in the city, Baltimore Open City. There's been an exhibition that reached out to the community and the MICA community and really brought people together about how open is our city and how we make our city more open, how we interact with each other, but also how we use space and how we have historically used space in our city. But elements of dealing with class and race and all of the issues that you deal with in an urban area. This exhibition has gotten rave reviews. You probably read about it in the city paper and other places. And there were lectures and tours and all kind of things involved in this project. Well, their Urbanite has now partnered with Baltimore Open City, and they have an Open City Challenge. And we're going to give you all the details. It's very exciting. Around the Red Line and how you can be involved and possibly win a lot of money. You know, it doesn't take a lot to be a lot to me, but it's a wonderful prize if you participate in this dialogue. In the studio with me is Daniel Dioka. He is a leader of MICA's Open City Exhibition. He's a professor of art history, theory, and criticism at MICA. He's also the principal and co-founder of Interborough Partners. It's a New York-based architecture, planning, and research firm. Joining him is Kerry Kiaia, and he's a MICA graduating senior. He's a student in MICA's Exhibition Development Seminar, which we talked about in the last segment, and he was one of the co-curators of Open City, this exhibition we were talking about, and Greg Hanscom, who is the editor-in-chief of Urbanite Magazine. Thank you all for being here. Let's go to the phones real quick and take some callers. 410-319-8888. If you have a question or a dialogue or an idea about these issues that Open City is getting us to address, if you have a position on the Red Line, we'd be very excited to hear what your thoughts are on ways that we can improve this pursuit or this project as it goes forward. 410-319-8888. Again, I don't think I said my name is Anthony McCarthy. I'm having the pleasure of sitting in for my good friend and colleague Mark Steiner today, who's traveling. Leo is calling from Baltimore. Leo, it's always great to hear from you. Welcome to the Anthony McCarthy Show.
Yes, good.
Or the Mark Steiner Show. I'm sorry. I knew I was going to do that at least once during the show.
Good afternoon, Anthony McCarthy and guests. How are you guys?
It's great to hear from
great.
You, Leo.
Great. Good, thank
okay,
you.
Okay, very briefly, just some ideas I want to throw out to you that may be useful in formulating your strategies. Of course, first of all, I'm a civil rights, a black civil rights activist, a community organizer, and scoutmaster. So I will tell you that when you deal with things like gentrification and the politics of this city and this state, we're talking about one party. And we know what that one party is.
Yes.
Now, we're talking about, I heard you say something earlier about parking garages. Well, don't forget the topical issue of landscaping parking garages in our city. They appropriated $33,000 for landscaping of parking garages to the detriment of working people. $133,000 for trash cans for Druid Hill Park. Druid Hill Park is the home of gentrification. And I don't mean just for animals. You know, again, we're not being sensitive about how to use the resources here to the advantage of working people, poor people, senior citizens, as well as the middle class. You talk about redlining, redlining, of course, speaks to the continued practice of discrimination against home buyers in some neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And the red line has failed to do the grassroots work that it should do in terms of involving people in decision-making, although I think it's too late for many neighborhoods because the red line as a transit vehicle has been imposed upon the community in many ways that are unfair. And lastly, if you ever watch the television during the snowstorms that we have here in this area, you'll find the TV Snow Patrol is in Rogers Forge. They're in Canton, but they're not in the inner city. So you talk about racism, they don't think it snows in black neighborhoods. So when you're talking about the struggles that people are having getting out from being snowed in, they don't talk about the black inner city. They talk about other areas. So that's just some food for thought. The developers are out of control here. Waterfront property is the order of the day, and they're developing waterfront property and some select neighborhoods to the disadvantage of middle-income and low-income people because we're not included in the final analysis in terms of affordable housing. The developers don't pay taxes. Neither does Johns Hopkins and many of these other institutions that control the politics and the decision-making here with the support of the Greater Baltimore Committee. We're not in it. We need to be put in it, and we need to get our religious institutions, our black churches and churches in general that have more than 2,000 members, all of our churches need to be involved, and many times our churches, you need to do a census on church involvement in the community. They look out for themselves, and that's fine for their members, but they're not involved in doing what Martin Luther King Jr. was doing, leading a crusade for justice. They're just looking out for their mega churches.
Now, Leo, you touched, as always, on so many important issues. I want to give our guests a chance to talk about those things. I appreciate you calling in today. Always great to hear from you. Dan, let's start with you. He touched on so many different issues about developers and who's making decisions and the historic redlining that has taken place in our city on so many different levels, from insurance to who can buy a home where. Those kind of dialogues are part of this open city conversation that's been taking place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, Leo, you touch on a lot of things that we touch on in the exhibition, which in a lot of ways really is about the uneven distribution of the kind of things that we all want and we all deserve. I mean, if you look at Baltimore, there is a 20-year life expectancy difference between the poorest and the richest neighborhoods in the city. How can we explain that? And when I try to, you know, talk about the importance of space and place and the importance of having an open city, I often start with that line. But we could talk about education. We could talk about life expectancy, education, home values, mortgages, it's a very uneven metropolitan area, like a lot of metropolitan areas in America. We don't really mean to beat up on Baltimore. A lot of things that we're saying are really true of a lot of metropolitan areas in America. And so the uneven distribution of these things is a real, real problem. And the fact that this often overlaps with race is, for us, a huge issue. We wanted to have a frank discussion with that. If you see the exhibition, we have maps that tell the story.
What's the website for the exhibition? I want to make sure we give that out before I forget.
Yeah, it's www.baltimoreopencity.com.
That's very easy to remember.
Yeah.
Now, Carrie, do you think that the students who were involved and some of the folks who wanted to get involved in the exhibition, did they get this? I'm sure they got it. I'm sure they understood the complexity of all these issues we deal with in the urban area. Many of them don't come from urban areas, though, correct?
That's correct. I think the class is pretty diverse in terms of, where we're all from. We had students from, Hawaii to Wisconsin to Connecticut, where I'm from. But we had all been living here for a few years because it is an upper-level class. And I think that there were a couple of, sort of things that we had to begin with, just as a sort of a jumping off point. Antero's book is definitely one of them, Not in My Neighborhood. Mm-hmm. The whole class read that before we even started the project.
And Antero came and spoke to you?
Yeah, many mm-hmm. times. He worked really closely with
That's
us
wonderful.
Throughout the whole process.
He's one of my heroes.
He's an amazing incredible. Guy mm-hmm. And you know, was such a huge help. So his book, I think, illustrates really, really well how this stuff happens and how uneven things are. And I think for us it was really important to look back at these tactics that were used to separate people and keep
Most
people
definitely.
Apart.
Some of them were subtle, others were less subtle.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of points in the exhibition where we really wanted to sort of highlight those things
nice.
And make those things, you know, understandable for the general public to sort of look at, well, is this something that still exists? How is it, you know, sort of evolved or adapted? And you know, how are these methods still like alive and well today in the city?
410-319-8888. Let's go to Hank in Baltimore, and then I want to turn to Greg, and we want to tell you about the Open City Challenge, this project, this partnership with Urbanite Magazine. Hank, welcome to the Mark Steiner Show.
How you doing today, Mr. McCarthy?
It's great to hear from you, Hank.
And how you doing, Mr. Steiner? Even though you're not there,
he's doing well. He's doing very well.
My thing is this, right? The young man who was talking earlier about free parking downtown, right?
Mm-hmm.
Free parking downtown really doesn't have a whole lot of validity because you need to create revenue, and revenue comes in from your tourists, right? Now, lowering it or cheaper it would be a more reasonable response. Second of all, as opposed to running this red line straight on out the Howard County, Columbia area, why didn't they try to do one that goes around sort of like the Beltway? That way it would have serviced the White Marsh, the East Point, along with the Green Spring area, right?
Hank, they should involve you in these planning committees that they have.
They should, right? But they only hear me on the radio, and that's the validity of that, right?
Uh-huh.
Third of all, right? As far as downtown, it would be more better if you just took and had a whole hodgepodge of mom-and-pop stores, ethnically diverse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Spanish, Arab, you know, black, Jews, white, and all that, as opposed to just Arabs and Spanish, right? Because the mom-and-pop stores are the people who actually bring in the revenue, right? And look at it now. Most of these Arabs got these little stores, right? And they not hiring the black people like the Chinese people used to do. So that's a whole separate income gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody goes to these big stores. I don't mind being out there in the mall. We can get out there. There's nothing really wrong with the buses, right? Because I've driven the buses even though I do drive a cab, right? And I see the buses moving on a regular, right?
Mm-hmm.
They could do a little bit better with keeping them up, but it is what it is, right? But we need to learn how to get along and see some of the events. 20 years ago, I couldn't walk out the house without a cell phone. I mean, couldn't walk out the house. I could walk out the house without being contacted. Now, everywhere I go, somebody got contacted. Right? We have to change.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I grew up in a neighborhood where the white majority were moving away as we were moving in. Now they moving back. So you might as well get used to it. Either strap up your bootstraps and get smart about what you're doing, or let them move you out. Your choice. You can co-op and stay in if you can't stay in by yourself. No man is an island. Right? And the most beautiful sight in Baltimore City is when you come up around Jones Falls, and either coming around, coming up, coming south, when you come up the Jones Falls, and you look at that city just open wide up,
mm-hmm.
and you see that big Mika sign with the light. Oh, that beautiful! That building is so beautiful, right? We have a very beautiful city. Look up at where you live at, right? Respect where you live at. I got hundreds and hundreds of pictures of beautiful things that nobody sees because they got a big attitude and their head is on the ground.
Hank, you are so right. Hank, I got to move. I really appreciate you. So it's always great to hear from you. Now, he's on to something. He said something that's so fascinating to me. In our everyday lives, I don't think we take time to really appreciate. First of all, Baltimore is one of the most beautiful, has some of the most beautiful architecture you will find in this country. And then that campus over at MICA is just so breathtaking. And certainly when you're on the Jones Falls and you come and see that, from the Buddha on up, it really adds to the quirkiness, but also the real energy of our city. And I'm so proud that MICA is a part of that community, and the MICA community is such an important part of our city. Now, we're running out of time, so I want to talk about the Urbanite Project and the Open City Challenge and how you all are involved in this wonderful Baltimore Open City conversation that's taking place.
Sure. So the challenge, again, is to take some of these brilliant ideas that we're all tossing around and to pick a few of the best and actually see if we can't turn them into reality.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that we are doing this is we're holding a contest. And we have partnered not just with the Open City crew, but also with the MTA,
that's right,
with the City Department of Transportation, and with D-Center Baltimore, which is a group of designers, architects. And it's a great little collaboration.
That's a great group.
Uh-huh. Yeah. The MTA has put up $10,000 in prizes for this. And we're looking to the public to come to us with ideas. And specifically, we chose the red line. And as a journalist, this is kind of tough for me because, you know, I look at something like the red line and I immediately want to dive into, you know, all the controversy,
all the implications, and certainly
we could talk all day about the red line and where it goes and where it doesn't go and where mm-hmm. it should go. But what we decided was that, love it or hate it, the red line is coming, and we can do a couple of things as a city with this thing. We can either survive it, you know, kind of, you know, grit our teeth and ride through this whole construction process, or we can really make something positive out of this thing. There's going to be a tremendous amount of money that's spent in this city. There's mm-hmm. going to be a tremendous amount of upheaval. They're going to be clearing out streets and clearing the way for this thing, construction, you know, crews and trucks coming in. The question that we asked was, how can we take that construction process and actually turn it into something that is not only a benefit for Baltimore during the process of construction, but that might also have some lasting impact on this city? So love it or hate it, we want to make the best of the red line. MTA came to the table and said, we've got $10,000 that we can give away in prize money. And so we structured this as a contest. And it was really the MICA crew that designed this contest, and with a lot of help from the D-Center folks. And, of course, you know, the city, Department of Transportation and MTA, they've put a tremendous amount of trust in us to hold this thing. Basically, what we're doing is we're going out to people and we are saying, it may take 5 years to build the red line. This thing is going to be, it's going to be a huge disruption. Okay. Right. It's cutting east-west through the middle of the city, if folks don't know. And it's dust is going to kick up. The traffic is going to be disrupted. We're going to have trucks coming in and out of this. Now, what can we do during that 5 years of construction that will actually bring the communities along the red line together? And, you know, we started brainstorming amongst ourselves. What can we do? You know, everything from, you know, painting murals on the side of some of these construction fences. Somebody suggested handing out free cookies, you know, so just like really, really.
I like that idea.
Yeah, I mean, small things. Okay, uh-huh. This is a real disruption in your life. How do we make everybody's life a little better?
Mm-hmm.
Another idea that came up was community gardens, you know, along the length of the red line. A lot of this ground is going to be dug up during the construction phase. Let's grow some fruits and vegetables and maybe even throw some big community parties, you know, some big picnics, introduce people to their new neighbors.
Yeah.
Because this this light rail line is really going to connect people throughout the city that until now have really been walled off from each other, literally or figuratively.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's what we've done. We've got this contest running. Deadline for submissions is June 3rd. We are really hoping to get a whole range of submissions for this.
Now, can individuals give proposals, or do you have to be part of a team? Are there any requirements about that?
There are some requirements, but essentially we're asking people to sort of build their own teams.
Great.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This is not like the Urbanite Project where we sort of handpicked,
that's right,
mm-hmm. you know, the people and put them in a room together. We're looking to the public to come up with the teams and the ideas, and anything, you know, could be anything from a you know, painting on the side of a wall to something much more sort of grandiose.
This is very exciting. And if you want to get more information about the challenge, this Open City Challenge, you can get that on your website, correct?
Yeah, but there's a better website that has more detailed information. If you go to the Urbanite website, there's a link
A link to it from the
Urbanite. If you go to www.urbanitebaltimore.com, you'll find a link to the Urbanite Project website.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got all the rules and deadlines and everything there.
So where do we go? We know this wonderful challenge is going to be taking place, and I hope everyone who's listening is letting some ideas start to sprout in their head on ways that we could really take advantage of. Because as you said, Greg, we could kind of throw our hands up in the air and just be disrupted and mad and frustrated. I hear complaints every day that people aren't being included in these conversations and these dialogues. Or you could think creatively about how can we take advantage of this opportunity in a very, very positive way? So where does Open City Baltimore go from here, in addition to the challenge?
In addition to the challenge, it goes to our pop-up shop.
That's right. Now, where's this going to be?
It's going to be at 106 Park Avenue.
106
it's actually,
Park.
That's the actual site, but we actually kind of took over that whole corner. So we have a mural up now over what used to be Shane Sandwich Shop. Fayette Street, and
definitely.
Then it kind of snakes around the corner and leads you strategically to the Park Avenue site, and it's not going to be what the market exhibition was. That was a huge exhibition mm-hmm. with lots of space. This is a tiny little pop up shop, and we want it to be a kind of active space where people could come and learn about what the open city is, have discussions, some of the work that was in the market is going to migrate down there. There's going to be some new work generated for this new site, and so we're excited about it. We hope also in the future to keep Baltimore Open City going. It's been such a pleasure to work with these MICA students. It's hard to imagine getting as talented and sophisticated a group as I got this semester, but. MICA students are constantly surprising in wonderful ways, and they're so smart. So hopefully in the future we'll work with some more students and add to this as a growing body of work.
So make sure, if you're listening, that you make your way to this pop-up shop and not only just go there to view the exhibitions and the installations, but become part of this conversation about our city. Now, I've been saying, and I've been thinking about this as we've been sitting here, I've been seeing these crazy pieces of art around the city in these odd little places, doorways and corners. Now, do you have anything to do with that? Like, I saw this huge rooster head drawing as I came down Greenmount Avenue, and I said, I know that MICA has
MICA
something.
Kids.
Yeah, MICA students had something to do with that.
Yeah, Carrie, you want to say a few words about Gaia's project?
Yeah. There was a student in the class who goes by the name Gaia, and he's
a troublemaker.
Well, it depends on how you look
at
it. But he's been doing these public works for
years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, years, and he's been in Baltimore 4 years now. So that's when you would have started to see things
I
pop
did.
Up.
I remember them. These odd little wonderful detailed drawings.
Mm-hmm.
In the oddest places as I would drive down. And I think Laura Vazella wrote about one that she saw coming into the city recently.
Yeah. I saw that thing in the Sun.
Mm-hmm.
That was really funny. But, he's been doing these works for a while. And, I think it was a really nice addition to the exhibition because it was, you know, out in public.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless of the legality of it or,
I think there were some questions raised about the legality of some of the pieces and where they were.
But it was really nice to get work about these issues into the mm-hmm. public sphere.
And Carrie, as a student, you're a temporary resident of our city, how important is it to you to be part of the dialogue to your adopted city like Baltimore? These issues that you all observe and you hear about, to be a part of the dialogue that really is seeking solutions.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really interesting point. I wouldn't say that I'm a temporary resident.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Of the city. This has definitely become my home. And I think a lot of students are beginning to feel that way, especially at MICA. More mm-hmm. students are staying, starting things, making things happen. So I think students who are in that sort of group are a lot more committed to what's going on in the city, understanding important issues, issues that really affect them as citizens. And I think more and more MICA is becoming a real facilitator in that, and asking students through a variety of different programs, the Community Arts Partnership, dance classes.
Office of Community Engagement.
Yeah, Office of Community Engagement.
Run by Karen Stoltz, just doing wonderful work.
The social, all the social design programs and stuff. It's really asking the students to be not only students and artists, but also citizens. And I think that idea of citizenship in this place is, there's a lot of really wonderful work coming out of it, but there's also a lot of really positive things happening.
Dan?
Yeah, just to add to that, one moment I had where I felt like, wow, this is really working, is when we were doing our programming and we had a calendar, and then the students came, brought this up in class. They said, wait, what we really need is a program about what we are doing as artists in Central Baltimore. We're taking over a storefront space on North Avenue. We're turning it into a gallery. We're putting in track lighting and doing all these things. What are the implications of us doing this? And for me, that was one of my happiest moments when the students insisted on having a program about gentrification, about some of these issues, and what does it mean to be an artist in this neighborhood? Mm. So that was, for me, a real highlight.
You should see the smile on his face. We're getting ready to wrap up, but what's next for Urbanite is this wonderful challenge, and certainly the Urbanite really has been really engaging the citizens of Baltimore. I think that's why the magazine is so successful, and I know you look at the bottom line sometime ago. We could be more successful, but I think that's why it's so successful. It really does push us to talk to each other, see each other, show up. There was a great faith issue that I got to participate in where we asked the question, why don't we worship together? You all are really engaging this wonderful city.
Great. Yeah, and I think we're seeing conversations and collaborations that you just would not have seen, or maybe could not have seen even 3 or 4 years ago in this city. I think the whole Open City Project represents something very fresh and exciting in this town, and it's really refreshing for us at Urbanite as people who are used to sort of forcing the issue, forcing the conversation. It's great to see this sort of take off and as vibrant as it is.
So. Greg Hanscom is the editor-in-chief of Urbanite magazine. Thanks for being with me today. Really appreciate this and appreciate what you all are doing to be a part of this this conversation with Open City.
Well, thank
Very
you,
nice.
Anthony.
Carrie Kiaia, I wait till the end of the show to massacre your name, a wonderful graduating senior at MICA, and Daniel Dioka, who is the leader of MICA's Open City exhibition and a professor there and does a lot of other wonderful things. Thank you all for being here. And
thank
I
you.
Hope that a lot of people sign up to participate. Coming up in the next hour of the Mark Steiner Show, first find out how climate change is affecting our health. We're going to talk with Dan Ferber, co-author of the new book, Changing Climate, Changing Health, How the Climate Crisis Threatens Our Health and What We Can Do About It. Then stay tuned for a look at the new film, Happy New Year, that explores the difficulties U.S. soldiers face upon returning home from war. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Anthony McCarthy, sitting in for Mark Steiner on The Mark Steiner Show, right here on Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We'll be right back.